righty, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. We are the number one HR podcast in the world. We've got almost 1,200 shows under our belt, and it is Wednesday. What could be worse about that? I mean, we got just a couple more days, and it's the weekend, and we have a guest on today that I'm really excited about. Because OC Tanner is one of these firms that I know, but I don't know. And I see them at a lot of trade shows. I know them, but I know that they've also, they do a lot of innovative things that I don't know about. And I'm excited to kind of get into David's world here for the next 30 minutes and kind of hear about some of the things that they've got going on and improvements and just all kinds of cool stuff that they've got going on. So David, if you don't mind, first of all, how are you doing?
Doing great, thanks. Doing really well. We got snow on the ground here, and life's good.
You just covered most of the weather for America right there. Snow on the ground. I'm sure some people are wishing that they had less snow on the ground these days.
I know. I'm based in Salt Lake City, Utah, and so we've had a more mild winter than most, and so we're glad to see some snow for the ski resorts. So we're making
a difference. That's a good point.
Good chunk around the country.
I went out to I'd been through Salt Lake a number of times, but I went out to Salt Lake last year, and then went up to Park Cities for an event. And the wonderful thing about that, and it was during the summer, but the wonderful thing is at the altitude, the great leveler is people that are really in shape. If you're not used to dealing with altitude like that, it doesn't matter. Like, it's a great leveler. You're either really used to high altitudes or you're not. And it doesn't matter if you're fat or, if you're running in triathlons or whatever. But I remember going walking across campus at this resort, and I mean, skinny people. They were doubled over. They were like sitting on benches because they just weren't used to the altitude. And I'm a kind of a pear shaped guy, so it was kind of nice to see them struggling. Skinny people struggling. It gave me great. No, I'm just kidding. But I love Park Cities. Had a wonderful time. It was for HireVue, actually. It was a HireVue user conference. But enough about them. Let's talk about you. What's first of all, do introductions. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm the Executive Vice President at OC Tanner, and I oversee the OC Tanner Institute, which is a part of the company that focuses on research and sharing insights around that research on workplaces, particularly as it relates to people in work and what they do, how they do great work, and what appreciation means to them, and the accomplishments of their goals. So I spent a lot of my time traveling. I've been speaking all over the U.S., Canada, the U.K., sharing some of the insights from a recent book that we put out that I'm the author of called Great Work, How to Make a Difference People Love. So that's been consuming a lot of my thoughts and time, and working on the next round of research around leading great work that we're just beginning now. So lots going on. Trying to keep up with it.
I was about to say, that's fantastic. I love the idea, and there's been some great examples of this in our space. Conexa had a wonderful research institute. Taleo back in the day had a wonderful tool. And I like it when vendors do that. I like it when vendors actually put time, money, energy, most importantly, money, into going and finding out and advancing the profession, advancing kind of their cause. And it's, the software is going to sell itself. The products are going to sell. The services are going to sell. They either do or they don't. You do that bit. But actually on the side of that and understanding kind of the experience or the plight of their users and the profession in general, I think it's genius. So I absolutely applaud OC Tanner for having the vision to do that. I know that probably wasn't easy. And there's a lot of million different ways to spend the money inside the company, so I'm sure it wasn't easy, but I'm so glad that they do it. What's top of mind for you these days? What's kind of keeping you up at night?
Well, a couple of thoughts about that. I think over the last several years, we've talked a lot, I think, as a profession, as a group, about engagement and how do we engage people People are now tracking in all of their surveys engagement scores where, you know, not that many years ago, companies were tracking employee satisfaction scores. And now I think it's shifted toward engagement. And yet with engagement, I've thought a lot about and talked to a lot of HR leaders about what is it that they want their people to be engaged in. Because engagement is often viewed, well, if you look up the definition of it, and the definition we all share, is basically a willingness or a commitment to apply one's discretionary effort toward your work. And that discretionary effort is for everybody discretionary. It's, you decide, do I do it or not? Do I really go after this or not? Do I really go to make a difference in my job or not? And the question I like to ask and that I've been thinking about is, engaged in what? I think for some people, engagement has almost become an end in and of itself, where our engagement scores move from, you know, 78% to 81%. We're feeling great about that. And yet I've been thinking a lot about engaged in what? And for me, the what is that commitment level going to just stay there as an attitude, or is it going to translate into action? Because nobody in the end of the day gets paid on engagement. We all get paid on results, on outcomes, on things that move our organizations forward. And so I've been focusing a lot of my energy and time thinking about what is it that causes people to not just feel committed and engaged, but actually move things forward and do something, actually make a kind of difference that helps drive results in their job, in their team, in their organization. So that's the place I've been really curious about. It's got innovation in it. It's got difference making. It's got the meaning of work. What causes people to do that, and how do they do it? That's what's been on my mind.
Boy, I tell you what, you've unlocked all kinds of great things here, because on some level, engagement kind of looks like busy. You know, to the naked eye, it might appear that, well, they're busy.
Right.
It looks like you're staying five past, you know, the time in which they left. So, you know, they must be engaged. But you've kind of brought it up a notch. You know, you brought it up a notch because you're basically saying it's got to be tied to value. At the end of the day, it's got to be tied. Engagement is okay. In fact, it's great. But engagement as it relates to value. And you know, I think you're really kind of touching around, you're nibbling around the edges of, do you think that there's a calculation of engagement? Do you think that there's a way to analytically go at engagement and say, there's a good, like cholesterol. Well, you know, there's a good cholesterol and there's a bad cholesterol, right? So could engagement in your world, you know, could we kind of see that, yeah, engagement looks like busy, you know, I don't really care if they're busy. I kind of care that they're adding value, and here's the metric or here's the analytic. Do you see it going in that direction?
Bingo. Yeah, good insight. I absolutely think it's going to go in that direction. You know, like anything, we see the evolution of the workplace and the evolution of what people leaders are thinking about and measuring. And I think we've made a step in the right direction by going from employee satisfaction, how satisfied am I, to how willing am I to really apply that discretionary effort. And I think the next level of metric is going to be what am I actually doing about that? What kind of value, as you described, what value am I creating? Not just, am I doing the job I was hired to do, sort of managing to spec, what I refer to as making a same versus making a difference. All of our job descriptions, all of the mechanisms that we see in organizations around the world really are oriented right now around making a same. This is the expectation, and we need you to do this thing that's expected. And yet all of the work that ends up moving organizations forward in material ways is not about making a same, it's about making a difference. And I think we're going to start to see metrics show up to track the value creation that's going on by employee. I think it's been murky and maybe a little hard and maybe hasn't had enough attention on it yet. We're playing around with some things to try to index that and create an index for measuring that kind of value creation that is the stuff that moves organizations forward, creates differentiation, creates results that were unexpected. That's the stuff, I think, where we're going to start to see the shift. I think it's going to take years to shift into that, just like it took years to shift into tracking and measuring engagement. So I see a lot more of that coming down the road.
Do you, so first of all, I think I'm right there, I'm tracking, and I think it tells a better story for the board and for the rest of the C-suite, because they're looking at engagement, and they would, everyone, no one's going to say that it's a bad idea. Like, no one would ever be that arrogant to say, I don't care if they're engaged. And there's too much great research that shows the link between engagement and productivity. Okay, so we all will say the right things, but at the end of the day, do they fund it? Do they put something behind it? And the more we can tell them the story of levers, where we pull this lever over here, and here's what we get with this lever over here, then now they're on board. I mean, I think that's a way to get the economic buy-in of everyone else that might have been a passive naysayer around something as soft as engagement. If we can show them direct links, I think we're going to be able to get some real hooks into them, and it'll help everybody. But I have a question, because you've studied this stuff around boom and bust economies and engagement. Do you see a different world? Like, engagement right now is important, but is it only important because we're in kind of a really high war for talent? We don't have enough talented people to do the jobs, so we're caring about culture and values and ethics and engagement and all this other stuff. Kind of as a way to differentiate, maybe it's a way to kind of tell a story that's more employee friendly, or am I being too cynical and jaded about this?
No, I think during the Great Recession and the year or two that followed that, everybody I think was sort of hunkering down. We didn't see a lot of job mobility, and then now that that's easing up and that the economy's strengthening, I think your point's right on, that I think a lot of companies are trying to dress up their organizations for appeal, and it's employee appeal. How do we attract the right talent, keep the right talent that maybe now has some options that weren't available a few years ago? So I think everybody's thinking about it. And, I think it's a two-part thing. So often when you look at the organization from an organizational perspective, you're asking yourself, how can I get more out of my people? How can I have them feel comfortable here, attract the right talent, and move us forward? But it's interesting and more organizations are beginning to, I think, in many ways, be forced to look from the other direction, looking it through the employee's eyes. What is it that would be a value for me to work here versus somewhere else? And when you look at what the employee wants relative to things like engagement, to productivity, to results, in all of the interviews we've done tons and tons of interviews of individuals, particularly those who've made a difference. And what you find, even amongst those that you might think, well, are they fully engaged or not? Everyone, every employee has a desire to do something meaningful, to do something rewarding, to do something where they feel like my work matters. I've accomplished something that I'm proud of. I've made a difference here. People long for that. And I think sometimes organizations sort of forget about that. They're sort of so preoccupied with how do I get more out of my people. If you ask people what they want, they want to accomplish awesome things. They want to drive home at the end of the day going, man, I did something great today. I made a real difference. Not just I sat in my chair and I did the work that the organization expected of me, just like the day before, the year before, 5 years ago, but I did something today that really contributed some new value. That's really what all employees want anyway. And I think the more organizations can sort of adjust their thought process to say, how do I enable that? How do I help an employee be excited about the possibilities of what they can do and bringing their own value to the table? we found this interesting correlation. Sometimes people think, well, if I could just get them engaged, then I could get them to make a difference. And something showed up in the huge body of research that we did that was sort of surprising, that raised a little more of the chicken and the egg question. If you get somebody involved in a difference-making initiative, however small or large, their engagement goes through the roof. All of a sudden now they're like, wow, I love what I'm doing. And so it's just putting the emphasis in the right place, and I think inviting people and creating an environment where people can, in fact, make the kind of difference that brings meaning and joy to their work life. And I think that's where I'm excited to be digging into, because I think that's more of the key than trying to, quote, get people to do stuff. I think that's the model that so many have thought about back in the Industrial Revolution.
Well, it begs the question, is engagement highly personalized, or should engagement be highly personalized, and do you see bands? I don't want to throw in generations because I think it's lazy content, but you might tell me differently. You might tell me that the different generations see this differently and thusly need to be engaged in different ways. And if that's true, that's fine. Please tell me that. But I want to get your take on, is engagement, or should engagement be treated as highly personalized? Should we, you know, in the same company, be engaging people differently, meeting them, quote unquote, where they are, rather than where we want them to be?
I think so. I mean, looking across the huge amount of research that we did around difference making, we did see some nuanced differences. You know, we definitely see a higher interest amongst millennials and those coming into the workforce. They have this really strong, I think, higher than previous generations interest in making a difference. They don't want to just be a cog, and nobody wants to be a cog in the machine. But there is this passionate interest in difference making that we see amongst the millennial generation and that cohort, but not radically so. It's more important. But you talk to boomers, you talk to Gen Xers, you talk to anybody, traditionalists, and you see this deep, I think, innate desire that I want to do something that matters. I want to do something that makes a difference. So when you then ask the question, so how do you engage that? You can't give somebody an engagement shot in the arm and go, okay, now I've given you the shot, boom, you're engaged. I really do think it's something where people need to see an opportunity. They need to feel empowered to go after something, to do something that engages their own sense of creative energy, their own sense of accomplishment, leveraging some of their previous talents or abilities or experiences. When people start moving into that space, again, their engagement goes up. But if you just, I don't know, if you just focus on trying to engage them, you'll think different thoughts than if you just involve them in an actual difference-making initiative.
Right. I've got to ask you about the premise for the book Great Work. So what, when you know, you can write a book about anything, right? That's the beauty of these days, is you can write the book, and whether or not anyone will ever read it doesn't matter. But when you were contemplating writing a book, what did you set off to prove?
That's a great question. It was a fascinating journey, actually, and having never, done a book before, I gained a whole new appreciation for how hard that is. But this began by, I was driving home one day from work, and I was thinking to myself, the O.C. Tanner Company, the company that I worked with, lucky to work for, has been around for 87 years, and it's the world's largest recognition company. It helps more organizations around the world help recognize and appreciate their employees for performance, for the contributions they've made over time, 5, 10, 15, 20-year intervals, or whether somebody's just saved the company a bunch of money and the company says, you know what, we're going to award this person a President's Award or a Gold Award for the difference that they made, the value that they created. And I was thinking, we're experts on the appreciation side. We've written lots of books about it as an organization. We share lots of insights. We've done tons of research studies around appreciation and its power and influence in an organization to help drive great work. But I thought to myself, what could that data? We've got now this database of literally millions of records where people have nominated somebody else to receive an award. And in that nomination, somebody will go into our systems and say, you know, I just saw Sally do X, Y, and Z, and it had this impact on the organization or on the team or what have you, and I think that's worthy of a President's Award, let's say. Those descriptions, I wondered, what would those descriptions hold if we analyzed thousands of them? So we took a random sample of 10,000 of these award nominations where people had been approved and given an award for the work they had done, and the question we set out to find the answer to was, what are they actually doing? Are there any common denominators, common elements to how they are making the difference across every major job description, every major job industry? Are there common denominators? Are there common building blocks to how people actually make a difference? And that's what we set out to find. And so we used four different PhDs from different universities, and we spent really a couple of years doing that research together with a huge study we did with Forbes, trying to understand, what is it? What are the building blocks? Are there certain things, behaviors, things that people can actually do that will increase the probability of them creating value and driving a difference? So that's what we set out to do, and we discovered some really interesting patterns and some very predictable kinds of behaviors that statistically can have a 10x effect on somebody's ability to make a difference. And so that's what led us to say, gosh, this is pretty interesting stuff. We ought to publish this. We ought to put this in a book. So we connected up with McGraw-Hill, and thus the book was born.
Well, that's awesome. That's fantastic. Now, of course, the show is blown by. I know I've got like 5 minutes left with you. So I need to ask you about you. You blogged about employee appreciation. And so I've got to ask you about that. What's new in employee appreciation? Because you and I, you know, we've grown up, we've had employee appreciation. Our fathers probably talked to us about employee appreciation. So we kind of get the bit. And there's probably people out there that are out there that might be jaded about appreciation. But I read your blog post and I was inspired. So take us into the world of employee appreciation 2015.
That's a fun journey to go on. You know, there's a lot. I think a couple of thoughts about it. I think going back a few years, even a couple of decades and more, I think appreciation was mostly mediated by the employee's supervisor. It was really a top-down thing. The manager expresses appreciation to the employee or to the subordinate about, you know, having done a good job on something. And while that continues to be meaningful and a very important relationship, we're seeing the emergence of opening up to allow for appreciation to go peer-to-peer in addition to manager to employee. In addition to employee to manager, I think we're seeing a real explosion in that area with social tools, social technologies that make appreciation more ubiquitous and more accessible for more people to give rather than just be the recipient. Because when only a very few people can actually appreciate or express appreciation to somebody else, it becomes kind of rare, and kind of all you can do as an employee is hope someday your work gets noticed. Whereas now I think we're seeing, and it's just part of a broader democratization of the workforce, if you will, that is opening up opportunities for people to go, hey, I noticed what my peer just did. I'm nominating them, or I'm giving them some recognition or some appreciation. And peers see way more than managers see in terms of how value is created on a day-to-day basis. So that's a significant trend that we're excited about and that we're seeing proliferate around the world.
Are there some hallmarks? Are there some underpinnings to appreciation? Like, are there some things that are underneath that that kind of make appreciation go?
Yeah, I think there are. You mean like sort of core human drivers,
yeah,
or things that people,
right,
really care about? Yeah, I think one of them is we want to know if what we have done is of value. We set out to do our work and to do things that ultimately our work benefits somebody else, whether it's benefiting somebody downstream in the whole value chain within our organizations or benefiting customers. We all need to know. We have this deep, deep drive to know, is what I'm doing valued or not? And I think part of recognition and appreciation's role is helping underscore that, helping point that out, helping point out, yeah, you created value. I think another one is we can't really see our own strengths. We can't see what we're good at unless that's reflected back to us through somebody else who's observing the work and the output. And I think recognition and appreciation is a huge flashlight being shined on your particular strengths and your abilities, which you may not know or understand are really there. And by somebody pointing that out, it gives you, I think, the path of what other things you can do based on the skills that you have that maybe you didn't know were there or were as strong as they were.
I'm trying to think about the relationship between values, corporate values, and appreciation. And it just kind of seems like common sense that you can't have a great places to work or best places to work or employer choice. You can't have one of those if somewhere either stated in your values or not stated in your values but stated in your actions is that you actually appreciate people. Am I wrong that that kind of seems like common sense, or is common sense common anymore?
It should be. You know, I think most progressive companies have figured that out, and there are still, it still surprises me, there are a lot of companies that still view employees like they're, you know, almost indentured servants, that they're here to serve the corporation, and that their their appreciation is their paycheck every 2 weeks. And it just stuns me. It's like, this is such a simple concept, and when people feel like their work is valued, man, people will go through brick walls when they know that if I go through this and I deliver this kind of value, it's going to be noticed, it's going to be valued, it's going to be appreciated. And so, yeah, I think I see it showing up in more and more HR leaders' cultural goals and cultural targets as they look to refine and improve and strengthen their cultures. Recognition and appreciation is part of all of those initiatives virtually. It's rare that I run across cultural initiatives that don't in some way acknowledge and appreciate what their employees and their people are bringing to the table.
Wow. Well, next time I have you on, we have to do a whole segment on what we should be spending. I mean, and we can't get to it now because David, we just blew through 30 minutes.
I can't believe it.
30 minutes just blinked. But next time I want to pick your brain about what's the investment need to be? Like, what should we be doing? You know, how should we be looking at how we invest in appreciation and recognition, et cetera? But, ladies and gentlemen, you have listened to 30 Minutes of Drive Through HR. We've had a wonderful show. I want to thank David for being on. David, I know you're busy. I appreciate you being on. And we're going to roll out to a little cure. David, have a wonderful day. And everyone else, thanks for listening to Drive Through HR.
Thank you.